Our next guest, Daniel Alvarez, has been on a travel adventure that defines the word epic, in my opinion. On June 13th of 2012, over 16 months ago, he began paddling his kayak in the northwest angle of Minnesota, and since then he has paddled and portaged his way to Key West, Florida, and back. And he is now, I believe, nearing his goal of returning to his starting point at the northwest angle, and he joins us now on a telephone line from somewhere. Daniel Alvarez, welcome back to the Roadhouse.
Hey, it's great. It's really great to be back on the show. Really great.
Where in the world are you?
I'm in Baudette, Minnesota, actually. And yeah, I'm at a landline because I'm actually staying with the people who I met on my way down when I first started the trip. I walked into the library, and the librarian in Baudette said, "Hey, you look like you need a place to stay." And so I'm back. I just got in about an hour ago, and I'm back at their house, and it's really neat to be in a familiar place again.
So you're on the Rainy River.
Yep, on the Rainy River.
Going the right way this time.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing how much easier it is with the current.
And it's, you've just barely rejoined your original route because, so now you're connecting with people who you actually met on the way. On the start.
Yeah, exactly. I finally rejoined it on Rainy Lake, actually, is where I finally got connected. I crossed the lines, finally. I came really close a couple of times. Like, I could see Isle Royale when I was on Lake Superior.
Oh, that's right.
And at Lake Superior, in the Boundary Waters, I was on the Canadian side, and I came in on the American side, but I never actually crossed until Rainy Lake.
And where did you come into Rainy Lake?
I came in from Namekin Lake, and I ported in through the, okay. I think it's the Bear River, Bear
okay.
Creek, something like that. And then, like, right near Kettle Falls is where I actually ended up crossing paths.
Yeah, okay. I want to just go a little, I mean, I want to talk, obviously, mostly about what you're doing now, but I looked on your website, and for all our listeners, predictablylost.com, all one word, lowercase, is Daniel's website, and you can see a lot more about him than we're possibly going to be able to cover here. In your personal background, you've done a lot of trips before you set off on this kayak trip. You did a lot of hiking.
Yeah. So in the long distance hiking world, they call it the Triple Crown, which is the Appalachian Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Pacific Crest Trail. And so that's really what got me into this, like, long distance traveling where you really are crossing the country in a slow, methodical manner.
And you did all of those hikes. Plus, you on your website, you show the Hajduk Trail, which goes from Arches National Monument roughly down to Zion.
Yeah, it's an 800-mile trail from Arches to Zion, and trail is a real generous term for that one. It's more like an idea or like a concept, and just a route through the canyon.
Yeah, I want the listeners to know they can go on the website and see a lot more about these, and the couple things that I thought was really clever was, first of all, your five-minute walk on the Continental Divide Trail, where it's a video of his feet walking the whole trail, really in little spurts, and you see all the different times he changes shoes. I counted five different shoe changes in the course of that. Is that pretty close?
Yeah, I think that's right. You end up getting, I think, about 500 to 800 miles a pair of shoe, at least for me.
Yeah,
I think,
yeah.
I don't know, other people may be better or worse, but with trail running shoes, you get about 500 to 800 miles. Depends on how much you want to push it and what terrain you're going through. But,
sure.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, enough about the hiking. You've obviously done some great hiking trips, and I seem to remember, I don't know that it's emphasized much on your website, but you went to law school, and you were a lawyer for at least a while. Is that correct?
I was. I am now I'm trying my best to not be a lawyer again. We'll see how successful I am at that. But yeah, I was a lawyer for about a year and a half out in California, doing nothing to help the world, just corporate law. And
did you grow up on the East Coast or the West Coast?
I grew up in Florida. I'm a Floridian.
Oh, Florida. So okay.
If you're in Minnesota and you feel the cold weather coming in, you know, for me, this is like winter.
Yeah, right.
And this is like the heart of winter for me. So
yeah, well, you're close now. How much longer do you expect to be on the water?
I think, you know, it took me about 5 days to get to Baudette when I started. So I figured it'll take me about 5 days to get back. I'm going to take at least a couple days off here. But it really depends on the wind and the weather. You know, if it's bad, I'm not against just holding up somewhere for a couple of days, letting storms pass. So,
sure.
Yeah, I'd say about a week.
Have a section in your webpage called Protect the Route, or whatever, where you're talking about the water being the key to your trip, obviously, and the water being key to our well-being and our life. You've obviously trying to impact how we take care of our waters, and you've connected with a lot of different organizations along the way.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I'm most proud of about this trip is just having gotten to go through so many different areas and see so many different ways that we as society have treated our waterways. You know, you go from a place like the Boundary Waters, which is about as pristine of a place as you can find in the continent. You know, you paddle in there and you think, well, this could be 200 years ago. You could see a Voyager canoe come around the corner and not blink an eye. And then you go from somewhere like that, and then I've also paddled, you know, lower Mississippi, where, you know, you have lots and lots of impacts from runoff, or like the Hudson River in New York, which is just it's an interesting place to paddle. You never know what kind of garbage is going to go right by your boat. And you can just see in how important it is to really protect these places. All of them, not just places like the Boundary Waters, but also places like the Hudson River that we can still make better. You know, a lot of this stuff has gotten better. But it's still not there. We still need to really work hard at it.
And you managed to find organizations, or they found you, I don't know, like on the Hudson River, for example. I think you connected with some organizations there that are working to protect the river.
Yeah, I mean, the Hudson River is a great example of a place that was great, then terrible, and is getting better. Mm-hmm. You know, at one point, the Hudson River was just like a free-for-all. It was basically a sewer. But now, you know, they've worked to get regulations, they're working to clean it up. But hopefully we have smartened up from that kind of thinking, and we will protect the places before they get destroyed. You know, like the Boundary Waters. Is always, when I think of pristine places, I always think of the Boundary Waters, and like that's the kind of place we just got to say, we got to draw lines and say nothing is going to happen to these places. We got to do everything we can to keep them pristine. There's so few left.
I agree. Let me just talk a little bit about the route you took south. You must have planned that pretty much in detail. I know you had diversions going out to Isle Royale and whatnot, but then you got all the way down. You went down the Mississippi River.
Yeah.
You went the Savannah Portage. That must have been a pretty crazy experience too, trying to find a route through there.
That Savannah Portage to connect, basically connecting the Lake Superior watershed to the Mississippi is an adventure on its own. It's very much, you're going to end up going through about 3 or 4 miles of swamp to get to the actual trail, because there's a state park with a trail, and it's a wild trip.
right.
Not too many people have gone through there. I've only met two other people who've ever gone through there. And we kind of looked at each other, and you know, we kind of saw that in our eyes. Oh yeah, you understand what that was like.
But you kind of repeated that when you got up on the Cam River, heading back.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been, you had some really, really rugged places to go through there too, didn't you?
Yeah, I really learned that when people tell you that it's not used anymore, the portage paths are not there anymore. It's good. You're in for pain. You're in for a little bit of pain. And the cam coming over, so just a little bit of history. There's basically the Grand Portage route, the Voyageurs. Using it. There's also the Kamenistikwa route, which they switched to because the U.S. is going to start charging them taxes.
Right.
And the Kam route is much harder. In fact, they had to pay these guys a bonus to go that way, from what I hear, which mm-hmm. those guys were tough. So if they're getting a bonus, you know, it's not good. Not good news. but yeah, basically to cross over the Continental Divide there is it's just the portages are gone. It's been kind of clear cut. They're just not there anymore. So it's basically a bunch of bushwhacking, which is hard enough without a boat. But with a boat, it's a journey.
Well, we're speaking here now to our listeners, to Daniel Alvarez, who is up in Baudette, Minnesota, on the Rainy River, finishing his epic travel adventure from the northwest angle to Key West and back. And he's made it all the way back up there. I'd say he's really on the home stretch, and the hard stuff is over, I would think. But you had some real hard... We were just talking now about the hard stuff on the Kamenistikwa River, which is the... a Voyageur route that was adopted after the Grand Portage was abandoned for tax reasons or whatever. But Daniel, you came down the Grand Portage on your way through initially.
Yeah, exactly. I came down the Grand Portage. And the Grand Portage is no cakewalk either. It's a solid 8.5 mile walk. But at least there is a trail, a very well-maintained trail. And you know, I think things over time, they get like you remember the good things and you kind of forget the pain a little bit. So in the back of my head, I'm like, oh, yeah, the Grand Portage was fun. But I think when I look at pictures, I find pictures of my foot like bleeding from blisters and stuff. So I don't know how accurate that memory is.
You're right. Well, I mean, if you were to describe the toughest section on the southerly route and the toughest section on the northerly route, which would they be?
I would definitely say the Savannah Portage is the toughest on the southerly route, mm-hmm. followed very closely by the Grand Portage, and then the Kamenistikwa. Really coming in from the Dog River to the Savannah River. See, if it's anything like Savannah or Savannah, you don't want to be there. That's what I decided. Either of those two, bad news. Bad news.
You write about it so well in your blog, so folks, you can read about how torturous the portaging was. And what makes it even more incredible is that you were portaging a plastic kayak.
Yeah. I wanted to do the whole trip with a one boat. You know, I didn't want to be switching boats. So I thought, well, originally I was just going to Key West. So I thought I need the kayak for the Mississippi, and I need it for the Gulf of Mexico. And so I thought,
Daniel.
Hey, I apologize. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I don't either. Well, I'm sure it isn't you. It's Ma Bell or whatever now runs the phone system. We were talking, I think, about your kayak, which is not exactly a lightweight boat, but it's a really good boat, a travel boat, and it can take a lot.
Yeah, that's what I really kind of came to appreciate about it was just how durable it was.
Yeah,
I put it through hell. I mean, I dragged it across boulders and rocks and over trees, and I just hope it holds together, and so far it hasn't sunk, so, but yeah, I mean, the bottom is all scratched up, but it's held up really, really well.
And when you portage, do you ever carry it, or do you always drag it, or do you use portage wheels, or?
It kind of is a combination of those three things. It depends on where you're at, so mm-hmm. if you have a really nice trail, or a really nice road, or sidewalk, I'll use portage wheels, and then mm-hmm. if it's short and, you know, maybe not terrible, I'll just drag it over. And then if it's really rocky or rugged and you just can't drag it, you have to carry it, then it becomes, you know, a two- or three-trip kind of deal. Where you
then
have
you have to empty everything out. And, yeah, exactly.
Which, you know, as anyone who lives up here understands, that's
the, portaging a kayak is not the easiest thing in the world, because partly because they're cumbersome, but also because you have to unload everything. You don't have it packed in big Duluth packs.
That's really what kills you, because it takes you, you know, 30 minutes to unload it, 30 minutes to pack it. You can't just drop stuff in.
You've obviously also solved the communication question, because you've been keeping good contact with your website and people, and somehow, how are you doing that? How are you able to post things constantly and write?
Well, I write a lot because, well, I'm alone, so what else am I going to do at night? I just write. I write. But if anyone who reads my blog would know, it's always about a week behind. So that's really the secret, is that I'm able to kind of load stuff up and let it post as I go. And that way I only really need to find reception or something every week or so.
Okay, I see. Yeah. That's why, I did notice that about it. I mean, the posts are usually about a week old when you post them. So it was hard to keep track of where you are. I had to wonder where you were. And how about resupply and food? I remember reading one entry when you were, down by the Michipicoten River, I think it was, and you were starting up toward the Puckasaw, and you were debating whether to go in and get more food or not.
Yeah.
That was a long stretch you were going to be without resupply.
Lake Superior, you basically have Wawa there at the Michipicoten River, and that's the only thing for a long way.
Right.
So, basically what I would always look at is kind of, where is the next place? The trip is basically a series of small trips, and that's really how I break it down in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You look at, where is the next place I can get food and water?
Mm-hmm.
Water is easier up here because you just filter it, but down on the coast and stuff, you think about that more.
Oh, yeah.
And then you figure out, all right, it's about 4 days to that next town where I can get food, and that's, you go for 4 days, and then you get there, you get food, and then you figure out where the next town is. And that's kind of how I've done it on this trip, because I'm not a great planner. So it's easier to plan just like the next segment or maybe the next two segments.
Well, it gets tougher, like you say, when you're going on a long stretch like the Puckasaw, where there's no resupply possible. And similarly, and through the Quetico and so on. So
yeah, those stretches, you start to have to get, you know, the lightest weight food you can get and really shove it in the boat and kind of
figure out
how to pack everything you can possibly pack in there. Nothing luxurious, just food and calories.
Okay, I want to kind of wrap it up by talking to you a little bit about your writing and about what's next. And I have to say, I think the greatest thing about your blog is your writing. I mean, it's a great story you're telling, obviously, but you do a beautiful job with your writing, and I'm hoping you're going to do something with that in the way maybe of a book. Is that a possibility?
Well, thank you so much, first of all. Thank you so much for the compliments. I really appreciate it. I would love to write a book about this trip and kind of take the blog and kind of expand on it, because there's only so much you can really say when you're writing at night. You know, sometimes I wish I had like 2 weeks to really work out some of the things I'm trying to say. So yeah, I would love to take it in that direction.
Well, good. And Buck mentioned before that you came close to one of the other guys we've been talking to. His name is Jason Zaborski, and what he's doing is he's bushwhacking from Atikokan to Ely through the Quetico. I mean, he's going without a watercraft. And,
oh, wow.
And he was camped on the south shore of Sturgeon Lake, I think, just a little before you came through there. Well, you posted on there. It looked like, I think I wrote down that you posted October 8th you were there. He must have been behind you. Must have been just a little bit behind you.
Oh, that would have been neat to run into him.
That would have been crazy.
I would have loved to hear. He's got some great stories.
Yeah.
I would look forward to hearing.
Well, he's out in the middle of it right now. He's down south of Sturgeon Lake. But at any rate, that post you wrote on on Sturgeon Lake when you took a little break there and stopped on the sand spit was pretty bittersweet and almost confused as to what you're going to do now when you come to the end of this trip.
Yeah.
Is that how you're feeling?
Yeah, it's always, it is a bittersweet feeling here at the end. You know, I've been doing this for over 16 months now, and so it becomes your life. You know, it's not a vacation. It's not like a break from your life. It is what I've done. Like, it's what I do. And that's always a tough adjustment. It was really tough on all the long-distance trails, too, and they were only about 5 month trips. So I anticipate that being a little hard. It's always hard to change things around in life, but that's kind of what life is about, you know. It's about moving forward and figuring out what's next and changing.
So is home in Florida now? You going back
to
Florida?
Yeah, I'm going to try and figure out what the record for sitting on a couch and watching TV is and see if I can beat that and then figure out what to do next in life. So yeah, I'll head back to Florida. I'm sorry, I would stay up here in Minnesota, but I don't have enough clothes.
Yeah, you need to spend a winter up here. You need to come up with a winter adventure at some point. We'll have you back. Well, Daniel Alvarez, it's been great talking to you. It's been really fun to follow you on your website, and we wish all the best to you, and thank you very much for sharing with us tonight.
Well, thank you. Thank you guys so much for having me, and just a shout-out to Grand Marais. It was a long time ago when I went through there, and it's still one of my favorite times.
Yeah, I wish you could come back. Someday, maybe.
Oh, I'll be back to Grand Marais.
Okay.
I will be back. Thank you so much.
All right, Daniel.